Welcome to Intercut Explains here on the Intercut Podcast channel, where we discuss everything about a movie, including everything we see after the credits. I'm your co-host, Zachary Shevich, and joining me, a lieutenant in the Western Forces, it's Arturo Zurita.
Right in the end zone right here. All right. In the danger zone, which really is a danger zone when talking about this movie.
Yeah, a lot of landmines, both literal and metaphorical, when discussing a film like this one. We already did a lengthy, mostly spoiler-free review of the movie after its premiere at South by Southwest. So if you don't want to get spoiled to any of the plot details, you can watch that video. But if you want to hear us talk in more detail about the movie and walk through the plot, then stick around for our thoughts on Civil War, a dystopian action film set in the near future during the Second American Civil War, follows a group of journalists who seek to cover the action on the front lines as the war escalates and the fighting moves towards the nation's capital in Washington, D.C. Art, we saw the movie in the beautiful Paramount Theater in Austin, Texas. But, you know, this is a big A24 release. It's going to be available in IMAX. It's the most expensive film A24 has ever produced, reported to be around $50 million. Did you feel that budget when you got to see it on the big screen?
Yeah, all in the third act. I've never seen a movie just throw it all at the table. Didn't even look like VFX. It looked like they were renting out these, like, Humvees and planes and all these different things. I don't think I've seen Washington, D.C. get that destroyed since Independence Day. I think as a thriller, it goes all out.
Definitely. But it even feels a little bit more like lived in than those Independence Day style movies. Like it's very street level. It feels kind of more like what we'd, I guess, expect it to. I think that's the thing that is kind of the most notable and like first impression I had of the movie is the way that it is able to realize all these scenes of like urban combat in modern American cities. You know, you look at, you know, even a movie like I Am Legend, right, which redoes New York into like a post-apocalyptic wasteland, there's still something kind of fantastical about it, something that you fail to, like, you have to suspend your disbelief.
It's not here. It's so far removed from everybody, so it's safe ground. It's a little scary when we use America as a setting.
Exactly. This is one of the first movies where it really kind of felt like an extension of our world. Like even in something like 21 Bridges or whatever, where it's like, oh, there's the police are shutting down the city. There still is like a Hollywood quality to it. And this didn't have that glamour. It just sort of felt like very guerrilla. And that just visceral reaction to that was one of the first things that I felt coming out of this movie.
Not to give it the praise of like what's the Children of Men, because that's still top tier. But it was more along that sense where it was trying to create this like crazy future where mankind itself has imploded and have gone all out. But I think having the setting be America, it has been really funny to see every American get very uncomfortable who's never had a problem when the battle, even if it's fictional, has been elsewhere. It got a little too close to home. It being here, and I find that fascinating because I don't think anyone, or very rarely anyone outside of America, has complained about it. So it's been this very interesting approach to, are you reviewing the movie or are you reviewing America and what you thought they were supposed to display and it wasn't what you wanted it to be? It's a movie. And as a movie, I thought it was fascinating to have a British director approach it, because you and I discuss many times you have other people from different countries, especially when it comes to America, making movies like a Tyrell, where they're intrigued by the racial politics, but they don't really get it. They want it as a setting, or they're intrigued in all these other different elements. Alex Garland is a director who's, you know, like, he reinvented the zombie genre and making them run in 28 Days Later. He came out with Dread around the same time The Raid came out and really, you know, was able to build up on the beat 'em up as you go up a tower. What he did with Devs, what he did with Annihilation, I know people are conflicted with Men. I think he has come out and delivered incredible movies that are very thought-provoking from the human condition and from the human perspective. And he doesn't sugarcoat things. In a time where people get sugarcoated everything, this is not your Top Gun movie. Your Top Gun movie showed that everybody needed someone to hate. We just all have a problem with who we're supposed to collectively hate, so it kept it ambiguous. When he made it us against us and the U.S. against the U.S., it's so funny to see people's reactions to it, because you hear people's critiques and they don't realize that that's what the movie's calling out. Civil War is a Rorschach, and what mm-hmm. you're critiquing shows what you, where you stand, not what the movie was supposed to give you. And it's profound.
Yeah, I mean, it is a fascinating movie already just based on the types of conversations that people are trying to have around it and the things that I think people are putting onto the movie, that some of them are there, but a lot of them are not. And I do think that, like, that sort of ability that the movie has to kind of reflect whatever you're bringing to it back at you, it both kind of highlights some of its shortcomings, but also I think highlights a lot of its strengths, of which there are many. So let's talk a little bit about the plot, because after we begin with the sounds of radio static and some brief words from President Ron Swanson, the movie mostly opens on Kirsten Dunst as the photojournalist Lee. She's on the ground in a war-torn New York City, snapping the action up close as civilians are holding empty water jugs and being kept back by police from a truck that's holding a gas or water. I was assuming it was water. And the scenes kind of evoke a lot of like police protests that we've seen in the media, until it escalates and just gets beyond what we were familiar with. There's a moment when Kirsten Dunst has to help a younger photographer played by Kaylee Spaney, but then a young woman comes running and holding an American flag, blows herself up in the middle of the crowd. And again, we get just sort of the idea of this nation torn apart. A thing that we're very familiar with seeing in the real world, in the media, but not one that we're used to seeing on an American backdrop. And I think that's sort of like the main thing that Alex Garland is going for here, is taking what are often anonymous images that we're seeing of foreign countries, whether you're looking at, you know, the images we're getting in from Gaza, or news that we're getting in from places like Somalia right now. And rather than having them feel impersonal because they're distant to us, trying to ground it in something that we recognize, which is our own backyards.
Yeah, and I think that's where a lot of people have had the debate on which way was it supposed to go. And it choosing to be apolitical has been a lot of people's issues, because we've gotten to the point where people think there's going to be politics in everything. People get that. I understand that perspective, and I agree with that. Everyone's going to have a bias. But to say that things can't be apolitical and that's a stance, it's not wrong. Math is apolitical. Science is apolitical. And journalism at its best should be apolitical. And that's what people are forgetting from this. If you thought being apolitical for the movie was a problem, then what you're saying is you wanted one side to win and you made up what the sides were going to be. The reason it's so mumbled and jumbled is because it's just using America as its setting and plays with those different territories that everyone's been overly focused on. It's fictional. Why is everyone dead in the zombie movie that you mentioned earlier, I Am Legend? Because that's the setting of that world. It just got a little too close to comfort, which is actually the best part of the movie, because it showcases where people lean. When is violence acceptable? You can show these people die, but not these people. And you're showcasing what you really feel at that point. I think the approach that he took was very smart, especially in the beginning, because he's showing imagery from a perspective we don't usually see, right? We don't think of the bomber as the one coming in with an American flag. He's juxtaposing things that we are so used to in our media. And look at the comments. That's what you get when you reverse it to people. Wait, that's not what it's supposed to look like. What are you doing? Incredible work.
That's the thing, is like people are having like very visceral reactions, I think, to a lot of this, because like we, as Americans, at least we know the context for a lot of our current squabbles, and we know the reasons why the division in our country is the way it is. And, you know, at least personally, I have people that I consider more responsible than others for that. But it's just, it's sort of not at all what Garland has on his mind. When we did our first review out of South by Southwest, we were sort of discussing whether this is meant to be like a near future or an alternate present. And I like referring to this movie as taking place in an alternate present, because it is so disconnected from our current politics as to basically be a work of fantasy. Like, this is the United States in name, but it's not the United States that we like live in. It just sort of looks like a country like ours. And I think that both it sort of prevents the movie from maybe going like as deep as it could, but in another context, But in another light, it also removes it from that expectation you're talking about to fulfill a liberal or conservative's idea of what a civil war should or can look like, and just sort of makes it about what would it be like for this country to be in the midst of war.
We don't want an objective view. It's got to be from our view, sugarcoated on my side. Like, that's what you complain, whatever your side is. That's what you complain the other side does. But here, everyone is doing it. And we always say this. When we come out of a movie and you have people who hate it and like it from different sides, that means the movie hit something. Definitely. You were mentioning to me, one of our first reviews out of South By had people going, obviously, the people with the red hats are going to be the bad people. Ladies and gentlemen, there are no people with red hats in the movie. Talk about seeing things that aren't there. And that's our point. People want this to be something that's going to talk about like their side. This is a journalistic movie through and through. What we're hearing is what people truly think about journalism and how biased they want it to be. I've been calling this Mad Max for journalists. It's about what they go through when they're at war. And I think you had mentioned a couple movies before this. When Whiskey Tango Foxtrot does it.
Yeah.
That's completely fine because it's over there. Like, listen to what you're saying. It's not about whether you like that movie or not. No one had a problem with it because it's away from us. Profile was a movie that talked about how women are getting indoctrinated. Americans love that movie, but they didn't like it overseas. That's fine because it's over there. The Last Thing He Wanted. I know you hated that movie, but it wasn't complained about for its politics, right? I'll even throw a long shot at it. Like, comedy, it doesn't matter what it is. It's just that it finally happened at home. And everybody freaked out about that, and it just showed everybody's colors.
It's kind of that thing where sometimes you see a movie when somebody's doing like your profession, or they're playing a sport that you know really well, and you're like, oh, that's not how I know it to be. But it's
you
also
picked
the
side in the Civil War. That's why you're looking at the movie going, I don't want to rewatch this game.
Yeah,
it's not a game. It's a piece of art that focuses on journalism. And if you go in there, you'll see it. In 10 years down the line, I can guarantee you all these reviews, which we'll get into later on. Like, we don't know how to discuss things together. And that's why a movie like Civil War, you look at the discussions and you see, wait, you don't even agree with yourself, but you're so stuck on your point. I can't wait to walk down some of those because it's like, what are you actually saying? But continue on this plot.
Well, you were talking about the perspective of it being from the journalists, and it's in these early moments right after the explosion where we really get that shown to us, because Kristen Dunst's character, Lee, she goes straight into the action and starts immediately taking photographs. And it starts this technique that they'll continue throughout the film, well, where you'll see them lining up their shot, and then you actually see the produced photograph. And something that I think is something that works really well in the movie is how powerful those images are. They really do feel like the kinds of things you would get from a war photographer. And it just sort of, you know, again, sort of shows you their whole goal in this. But after we follow Lee taking some shots, we then cut back to Kaylee Spaney's character, and she is taking shots of Lee taking shots of the carnage.
Fascinating stuff.
Again, we get sort of the perspective of the movie. We're not just looking at the thing that the war photographers are immersed in, but we're looking at the war photographers themselves.
Exactly. If I could throw another one, you could have whatever opinion you want. But when the filmmaking team comes out and says, no, trust us, it's about journalism, then why are you telling the director they're wrong? You don't have to like the movie, but you can't say what they were going for just because you wanted a different movie. They had talked about Come and See being the film that they watched going into it. If you're going to argue against Come and See being an influence, I'm seeing where you're standing. A lot of people saying it's a pro-war film. Watch it again and don't think it's a war pro film. You will see it differently. You are choosing to see it a certain way. I implore you. I promise you that is not what the movie is doing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, right after that, they go to the hotel and Lee is there talking about how the Wi-Fi is so bad and she's trying to upload her shots. I mean, it gave me flashbacks to 20 Days in Mariupol, the Oscar-winning documentary in which that struggle to not just get your photos, but get your photos out is such an integral part of it.
When you're on the scene, I also really like the line that she says where she thought that every time she was away and taking these photographs, that she was sending a warning home.
Yeah.
And the warning didn't do anything because now she's in there. And again, that's the scary part. It's something we're not used to, the war being here.
Yeah. And sort of that question of what the photojournalists what they're trying to do, right? Why are they in it is a question that sort of rings throughout the movie, because as you mentioned,
are they doing it for their own credit and stuff? Yeah.
Right. And you know, what baggage are they bringing in? What morals are they bringing in?
Not
you know,
who wasn't wearing a red hat. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, she tries to, the characters sort of try to be that kind of like apolitical presence that you're sort of alluding to. But Lee reveals herself a bit in that moment there, and that she views her job as sending warnings back home. Whereas Joel, the Wagner Moura character, you know, looks at the firefight and says it gets him hard. Like, some people are in it for the thrill of it.
He's got him bored. He's like a vet, which we discuss a lot as well here in this country, where once they come back, like, they're so used to doing that, that it's a completely different feeling over here. I was like, even in talking with some, the idea that, you know, your heart rate when you're over there, overseas, even like with police officers here, the moment they retire, they're not getting that anymore. And that's why many of them die of heart failure. That's why many of them, like you're saying with this as well, crave the action that they used to get. And what's fascinating is that instead of focusing on the soldiers, yeah, they're taking pictures of them, but the subjects are the people who shoot the subjects. These journalists who, in a sense, also have that PTSD journalists do, because they're in the same trenches. And it's like, how does it affect them? If we know how it affects vets, how does it affect these people who are the ones capturing and redelivering those messages? I'd even go as further, since I know we're so stuck on like what the politics of it are. It's a fascinating movie in the sense that you have the older journalist played by Kristen Dunst. I don't know if you have the name on top.
Kristen is Lee and Kaylee is Jesse.
Lee, based off of one of a very famous journalist who's also getting a biopic.
Lee Miller.
Coming out maybe later this year.
Yeah.
Big movie right there.
Yeah, I think they announced it later this year, Vertical.
I like the idea that you're almost seeing like the approach to maybe art, or art that is so important it affects the world, and where you have the master who's been at it, the professional, and then the amateur who's coming in. And are you willing to like almost surpass the teacher? I think there's such a good movie in there to discuss, and we're not going to be doing that till 5 years from now, Zach.
We're going to get more into it. Hung up on the politics of it.
We're too hung up on something.
Well, that's actually those two characters and their arcs throughout the movie are the thing that stood out to me on my rewatch of it, because I think in your first watch of it, you are really taken by Jesse's character and the path that she goes on, but there is like a more subtle arc with Lee's character as well, which we'll get into. So more things to consider as we go ahead, because at that hotel, Lee and Joel meet up with Sammy. We find out later that Lee and Joel are from working for Reuters, and Sammy's working for the New York Times, what's left of the New York Times, they mention. But the three of them agree to go down to DC in hopes of interviewing the president, who is in his third term. And then Jesse, Kaylee Spaney's character, manages to talk her way into the trip as well. You know, we find out a bit about the president in these opening moments of their trip, that he is in his third term in office, that he's disbanded the FBI. We don't find out necessarily whether he's like on the right or on the left. It's more just that he's kind of a fascistic leader at this point. And I just find it very funny for people who look at, you know, a caricature of a fascist, and they're like, how dare you insult my president? This is a caricature of a fascist.
That's wild.
If you are seeing reflections of a real world person there, that is on you.
Why would you admit that? Exactly.
Yeah.
The reason why none of it is supposed to be what people wanted it to be, which is what we're going through right now in this country, up on screen. We don't agree right now on the news and in social media. We would have hated that version of the movie too.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
So now you're just hating the version of the movie you did. Like, it's insane. Yeah, I agree with you. I got some more towards the end as well, where it's like, you hear the opinion, it's like, that don't make sense. You wanted the other people to die? Like, that's...
Right?
I don't get it.
Yeah. So their first obstacle comes when they need to stop for gas. And this sort of hints at the kind of tension throughout the movie is that you don't really, in a country that has collapsed in the way that this one does under civil war, you don't know what you have around every turn. You don't know whether the person you're coming across is friend or enemy. So they negotiate for some gas, and Jesse gets curious about something she saw and sort of goes off to the side of the gas station where the gas attendants have a couple guys hanging from their wrists. Yeah. But it sort of, this is the moment that I think kind of sparks the arc that we're going to see Jesse go on, because she, as they leave the gas station, she says, "I didn't get the shot. I didn't think to take the shot." And she didn't think to tell them to let them go. And it's Lee who says that you can't spend your time like thinking about those things, right? You can't get hung up on, they're going to do what they're going to do. And your job is just to get the shot, just to be there to document it. Jesse, shortly after, when they're photographing the helicopter, even asks her, "If I get killed, would you take that shot?" And even though Lee doesn't say yes, she strongly infers that that's what she would do. That's her job as a war photographer.
It's just to report. And I feel that that's what this movie is. In the movie, he was telling you what this movie is. It's not for it to side with you. It's to show you what reporting is. Can you show people and strip away all the things that we connect to? Can you see how it plays out and what the issue is? And I think it did a very smart approach with that, especially through the characters.
Definitely. We get one of the early big action sequences soon after at this firefight that takes place just outside of Pittsburgh. This is one of the scenes where Jesse's like learning how to do war photography, kind of watching as Lee does it and mimicking some of her moves. I know you mentioned the, like, she watches her crouch down and then she crouches down. Moments that we're talking about where the video footage is interrupted by these stills that are meant to evoke war photography stills. A lot of really strong ones in this part of the movie too. This is also a part of the movie where I think it makes a choice that leans the film towards the kind of like the pop entertainment side of things rather than being this kind of dour reflection of humanity's divide. Because in the midst of this firefight, all of a sudden they play, Alex Garland chooses to needle drop De La Soul, "Say No Go." It is a discordant choice, like not exactly what I would pick for this, like, you know, picture of humanity, you know, murdering each other. But I think it is something that lends to the kind of watchability of the movie. There's a lot of like pop needle drops in this film that I feel like juxtapose the seriousness of what's going on.
Literally the phrase,
and undercut the tension.
Say.
Yeah.
To me, the juxtaposition was to show you, like, this is them at a job. Any other job, when they're done, they'd be chilling. But none of us know to look at that as like, no, you can't just turn that off, which is an argument the journalists are making in the movie.
Right.
So that's almost like the adjacent scene that's supposed to rip you out of, like, and now they're kind of done with it. And I think it serves its purpose. It's supposed to be jarring.
And you liked that element of it too, because it's even the opening moments of the movie and the closing moments of the movie. It's a lot of like pop soundtrack stuff, and it's less of like the score.
It's cheeky.
Yeah, it's cheeky for sure.
But he's a Brit.
Yeah. One of the scenes shortly after that is this sniper scene through Winter Wonderland golf setup. One of the tensest moments in the movie as well. This is a moment that highlights something that Alex Garland does, which is pretty fun, in recasting actors he's previously cast in other projects. Kaylee Spaney, of course, was in Devs, as were both of the snipers in this scene. Both of Sonoya Mizuno's boyfriends from Devs, Jin Ha and Carl Glusman, are the two soldiers stationed there trying to take care of the sniper. Nick Offerman, who we mentioned earlier, is also in Devs. A lot of people in Devs and this just come to think of it.
Nick Offerman was in Devs, yeah. I think the best part of that scene right there is that it kind of showcases what the movie's trying to tell you. There's like a moment where they say, "Who's shooting?" Or, "Who are you shooting at?" It's like, the people who are shooting at us. That's
exactly
literally what it comes down to. And it's like, that's what a lot of discussions and turmoil really leads to. You just don't like the other person because you feel they're coming at you. And they feel the exact same thing back. And no one's stopping to talk. We're just yelling. We're just aiming and releasing.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I think a lot of people took issue with in the months leading up to the movie was that map that came out that showed the new divides during the Second Civil War and the idea that Texas and California, right?
Yeah.
And the idea of a union between the Republic of Texas and the Republic of California and whatever, these states that we know have many political differences. But, you know, when you, in the context of this movie, just like that scene, when you're fighting somebody, it's just about who you're fighting, right? Like, these are the states that we learn have chose to secede, and there's many states that have chosen to stay loyal. So it's a fight between the secessionists and the loyalists, not a fight between politically right or politically left or anything like that. And here you have that distilled to its essence.
What it is, yeah.
You know, Joel asks him, you know, what side are they on or what side are you on? And as you said, it's just about, like, they're shooting at us, so we're shooting at them.
Yeah, it's almost like people had brackets on their states, and they're like, ah, they busted my bracket.
Right.
When that came out, people said, people looked at the map and said, wow, this is very fictional. Because it's a fictional movie. It's the point. I don't know. I think that's like a very apparent thing where, like, someone answers it and it's like, should I be viewing it as that? Yeah. Do that. Don't do it the other way. It's interesting that people, like, try to get very, like, intricate with it about, like, how much of Texas, how much of Cali. I think a lot of Cali's more conservative. Just like Illinois, right? Chicago is the bluest part of it. No, we're losing the fight with the rest of the plains. Mm-hmm. It's all red. So it's like, even in that, are you thinking it thoroughly, or are you just thinking about the way you would align the stuff?
Right, but again, your caricature. Or your...
That's why I like your take of it being an alternate reality. So it allows you to, you're supposed to see it from an unbiased point of view. In the premiere, he said, I have a lot of faith in the audience. He should have learned from men.
Right.
it's going to age well. It's going to age well.
Yeah.
Once we're away from it. Once the Civil War is done, then we go through.
You're right. Once we experience it for ourselves.
Dear Lord. Okay.
All right, well, speaking of things to be skeptical about with the movie, I think after that sniper scene, we get to the two things that you're the most skeptical about with this movie. I can critique it too,
yeah, for real things.
Let's talk about that scene that takes place at the boutique clothing store, because they are, as they are escaping a fraught situation, they suddenly find themselves in an idyllic suburban paradise, and they pull over to this boutique clothing store and take a break for a bit of normalcy and a bit of shopping, as if there weren't a civil war raging in the country. They asked the clerk about it, and she says, oh yeah, we just like to stay out of it. And I feel like this is a scene that's really meant to evoke the people who try to remain politically neutral at fraught times. You know, like, if you think that Garland is unaware of the idea of being politically neutral, this would be the scene that kind of counters that thought. But what was your issue with the boutique clothing store moment?
I had one issue, and then a part that I think is really good in that scene, maybe a little different than how you're taking it here. The main issue I had with it is because it's clearly a trailer moment. They needed to go there so that they could be like, don't you know what's going on outside? It's really crazy. Why would you go to a boutique? This is a running, functional town. That's what's so jarring about it. Go to a deli. Go to a restaurant. Go to a store. You guys are buying clothes you're not going to wear. It gives that funny moment, you know, I ran out of film, I can't take your picture, I already took hers. That's cute. It didn't make any sense. Like, that's one where, no, the setting would be somewhere else that you would stop in your pit stop. I also felt that with the car scene that you're going to bring up in a little bit, but I'll focus on the part that I thought was interesting in this movie. I don't think it's so much that it's apolitical at that point as it is that this town has chosen a side, and their side is to not participate. But if you come in here, there's a point that people keep missing in that scene. There's still guns, you just don't see them up at the top. And what that really took me with is that he's kind of saying this massive civil war that you see in this movie, that's what makes it fictional. But it's happening right now. There are so many towns, especially, the movie does use footage from 2020, if we want to start getting deep into that, where when things have happened in this country, there have been people who just went about their day. Hell, there was people who went about COVID just about their day. It is kind of telling you that even in a civil war, when things happen, people will find a way to ignore it. And I think it's deeper than that. He's saying before the bullets start dropping here, to that degree, it is already happening. And you guys are already ignoring it.
No, absolutely.
That's what I got from that.
You maybe articulated my point a little better than I did, but that was what I was trying to get at.
We should start a podcast.
Exactly. We should probably do this podcast more often. But it's just that whole idea of like saying that you're not taking a side, removing yourself from sort of playing a role in it. You still are playing a role in it. You mm-hmm. upholding the status quo is a political statement in itself. Right. So, I don't know. I think that scene speaks to a lot of the criticisms of this movie, ironically.
I think so.
But yeah, maybe it could have taken place in a deli.
Yeah, maybe any town. I would feel like that was a southern town. But I saw that happen here in Chicago. People would mm-hmm. do these, you call them protests. They sometimes turn into riots if people want to hear that. And some places here had people on rooftops saying, "You're not coming here." It happened mm-hmm. in democratic states, too. We're so stuck on what one side is and what the other side is that you don't see sometimes the similarities that it could happen to either. Like either side could have been that town. But we've seen it in both places. I do want to lean a little bit in there about him using America and then him using American footage that was shot.
Yeah, because that is another thing that is proving to be controversial about the movie. Yeah.
That's a Pandora's box. Through and through. Now, first, before we get into the credit, what did you think of the use of it in the movie?
So, you know, I look at it from, I'd like to say, like a removed lens. Like, I remove the politics of it, particularly if it's not footage that I'm immediately recognizing. Because I wouldn't say it wasn't any particular clips that I recognized, but... You know, I think it builds an atmosphere. And sometimes I think that using archival footage can help build an atmosphere.
Yeah.
So it didn't bother me, but, if you recognize it, maybe you're having a different experience with it.
And I can see people figuring out what it is later to add to their points of why they don't want to like the movie. It's not something that bothered them. But if they can pick at it or someone told them, "Hey, complain about this," then they can. Here's my biggest thing for it. It's a decision that you can critique. And you're lying. You don't like it because it happened in America, but you're a hypocrite. Every single person I've heard complain about it didn't complain about it when he did it in Monkey Man. That's all real footage in Monkey Man when he's doing the training montage of actual stuff that had happened. All their version of the same footage that he showed in America, but it's far enough away for you to not give a damn. You mean
the protest footage
that
they use
don't
in
care.
Monkey Man? Yeah.
Right? That's right. Real footage. He credits it at the end as well.
Right. No, it's
bias,
when,
bro.
It's again the idea that we're talking about again over and over and with this review is that people like to bring their own context to things. And I think there's this failure to sometimes recognize what the movie's trying to do and more of a putting an agenda on a movie.
What
like
you want
this.
It to be, yeah.
Yeah,
because even the footage, it's marches and riots that are both liberal and are both conservative. So even in the use of real footage, it's still not choosing a side.
Right. And so if you want to talk more specifically about the names that are credited, right, because I think Andy Ngo, I might be mispronouncing that, is one of the names mentioned. Helen Lewis is another one that producers apparently thanked.
Y'all have ever seen
credits.
A World War II thing where they credit Nazis because it's the footage that they shot?
Riefenstahl or
you all are fools. I don't like, and I sent you the message, I can see when the conversation becomes false. I had sent you one where a person, knowing good and well that there's credits for footage, and then there's a thanks, and chose to conflate it so that they could say they thanked the Nazi. That is false rhetoric, and you are a liar. You are the problem you are creating. You don't believe what you believe yourself. Hmm. You don't. It is not choosing in that... Like, to think that Alex Garland... is on another side when you've been loving his films for years. You are literally lying to yourself to be mad. Why are you doing that?
Yeah.
Why are you doing it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Zach,
I mean,
tell
people,
me. Right.
I don't love those names being in the credits either, but like
for
at
sure,
the same time, it's just
not. You can't just call someone a Nazi because you disagree with them. Not the
that
first
too.
Guy. I've heard garbage about the first guy, but it was like the second one in that tweet where they asked her what'd they do wrong and disappeared. Still tweeting on other things, but when she lost that fight, she disappeared. It's right. ingenuous. And I'm going to tell you right here, if you really want to push your side, maybe don't lie. It'll really help in the long run. It'll really help in the long run.
Yeah. And also materially, I just don't know if it's that significant an element of this movie, right? Like,
it's not, because when it was a monkey man, they didn't care.
Exactly. Like, it, I don't know if it's circling back on like the late night with the devil arguments, but like, you know, these are fleeting moments in a much bigger movie that many more people are contributing to. Yeah. And I don't know if that's where I draw the line as like, oh, this means this movie is like just detestable or something like that. And maybe that's like a failing on my part, but I just don't see that being that big of an issue.
I think it showcases what people are going through at the moment. That's why the AI in that movie, no one would have cared. But because we're all on edge for it, people complain about something because they felt the need to say something. How many people have even seen Civil War before commenting on it? People want to be a right. part of the discussion, and being a part of the discussion is what creates the chaos when exactly. you don't know what you're saying.
Well, circling back to more things that you actually had issue with in the movie, immediately following that boutique clothing store scene, there is a heightened moment in the car where they're worried that there's another car quickly coming up behind them.
Yeah.
And it turns out to be a pair of journalists that they're friends with who
Stupid.
Seem to be bored enough that they're going to jump between the cars. It creates a pretty exhilarating bit of action that, you know, maybe hinted at something more dramatic in the trailer than what we ultimately got.
Yeah, we're all too busy over here that we're not critiquing the actual parts of the movie. Like, have you heard anyone critique about the technical elements?
No, not really.
The performance? Like, where are the reviews for the movie? When did we stop talking about cinematography? When did we stop talking about other things? Man, I saw that moment in the movie and I went, y'all really did this just for the trailer shot of her moving from one side to the other. That's where I'm at. Like, I'm looking at this movie critiquing the actual parts that are goofy. That's a goofy bit. You're not going to have a journalist who's doing dumb stuff like this surviving. And doesn't he die immediately? That boy would have died months, years ago. He would have died at the start of the war.
They are war photographers. They're in it for the thrill at some extent, right?
The man would have died eating a Tide Pod. It was a foolish scene.
Yeah, I mean, they're quickly going to get some comeuppance for it because immediately following this, they run into white supremacist Jesse Plemons. Do you know that Jesse Plemons wasn't supposed to be in the movie, that another actor dropped out at the last minute and he happened to be around?
Do you know who?
I don't know who, but I'm desperate to find out.
Well, Jesse was perfect.
Scroll through casting announcements, see if there's something out there.
Jesse was perfect.
Jesse is really, really excellent in this. I don't know how we didn't mention this in our previous review, but it just goes to show you how much there is to talk about.
Because we were scared.
This movie. Just terrified of him.
Someone was bringing up the hat, says he's not wearing a hat, but he is wearing rose-colored glasses. And just that adds so much to this creepy character who, when you're, you know, there's obviously the metaphor of you're looking at life through rose-colored glasses, but if everything's red and all this bloodshed, do you see the difference? That's the example of someone who's so far gone. And it's handled perfectly because that scene doesn't go the way people want it. That's why they get all up in arms. What a beautiful display of what kind of American are you? And what are the two states? It's more fresh for you. I know they mention.
Yeah. So in this scene, he sort of interrogates them on like, what kind of American are you? Because he says that Joel tries to sort of calm the situation down by saying they're American journalists. And Joel says he's from Florida, which Jesse responds with Central America, I think it is.
That was great, towards the end. Yeah.
Jesse says that she's from Missouri, the show me state. Uh-huh. And then Lee says she's from Colorado.
Colorado.
Yeah.
In this time, Colorado and Missouri, to me, having been through both and actually passing through both of them at the same time on many trips to Sundance, they're different states.
Yeah.
Completely. But the idea of what is American was so much a part of his character and showcasing where a person, where a soldier can get at, that scene is supposed to showcase what they slightly show you in the trailer, the most grotesque imagery that we've seen so many times from like a World War II, from Vietnam, all locations that aren't here, and to see that in our back door, that's what that moment is supposed to represent.
The pile of bodies in that mass grave is
definitely that we can do it to ourselves. Yeah,
exactly. Right. And, you know, I think something else that's interesting about that movie is he's wearing military fatigues. But something that you kind of notice when you're trying to follow the action of the movie is there are people in fatigues on both sides, and you know, there's different levels of in the military. Like, he doesn't exactly seem like he's, you know, on orders from his lieutenant or anything like that. It definitely frightening scene. Was this to you the best scene in the movie?
Yeah, he's incredible. It's definitely in the top.
I mean, it's got to be one of the best one scene performances of the year.
Thank you. Performance wise, it's the best one. I'm sure. Like, I'd probably lean towards that nonstop action at the end, but he does his bit with the gun. Right?
The way he handles the gun is so frightening. It's frightening.
It's a great performance. Why are we complaining? There's a good movie here. Well, I'm so disappointed. I think
this is a scene that is eliciting complaints both from politically left and politically right.
So you're both wrong. Like, think about, think about, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can't, there's a lot of people who are coming to this movie and seeing that the perspective is like all white guys bad. I have to imagine this is like the main scene you're thinking about. But again, similar to the fascist comment I had earlier, if you're looking at an ultra nationalist racist and extrapolating that to mean all white guys, that's on you. That's your perspective and your brain influencing that.
And to just keep it, because I know someone hears a critique for them and they'll get mad because now you're just critiquing white guys, Zach. I'll take it for you, Zach. Tap me in.
Please.
Anyone saying that the minority characters dying in this movie is unfair. When there's white guys dying in it too, you're saying one's more appropriate to die on screen.
Yeah.
We're going at both of y'all. Like, y'all are not thinking it through.
Exactly. Like, I don't, there's a perspective, like, I understand not wanting minority characters to be killed off just as, like, in service of, like, a white character's arc or something like that. But this is about
the ending
division.
Of this movie is not.
This, like, most civil wars sort of become about who are the insider groups and who are the outsider groups. Like, this is a reflection of, like, real world dynamics. And I don't know what you can do other than not casting diverse actors. And if that's what you're asking for, then I don't think you're going to get the results you want. So I don't particularly jive with the criticism from either side of this scene particularly.
It doesn't make any sense. And I think a big factor here would be the idea that McKinley's character, when put in this position, has to be the one who drives in to save them when things get very tense. And in that drive out, it's obviously a shootout, and he ends up dying in saving them. People don't like that. Because you're not supposed to. When did we stop realizing how to, like, watch movies?
Look at Grace Randolph's tweets, man. It's a classic, like, just because something is being depicted in the movie doesn't mean this is an endorsement of anybody's actions. Like, the inability to separate what you see on screen from what is, like, good or right is at an all-time high.
But you don't need to explain that to people because they do it all the time for other movies. So when you already do it there, you don't believe in your own way of thinking here.
Yeah. Shortly after...
All the violence is bad. Sorry, we forgot to say it at the beginning. War is bad.
We condemn all sorts of violence.
So forgot about that.
I shoved you when we were at South by Southwest. I condemn that as well.
He was wearing the rose-colored glasses too. I was like, how did you get that pair?
After Stephen McKinley Henderson's death, Sammy's death, I guess we could say, they arrive at a Western.
He told him. He freaking told him, dude.
Yeah. I mean, he's just such a great character actor. He brings this, like, really affable quality, but, like, a little bit overwhelmed, a little bit in over his head to every performance. He's such a great actor. Yeah. And I thought it was a really good showcase for him. But this moment does allow for a really interesting sort of development of the twin arcs of this movie. Because just as Jesse is learning to be more dispassionate and just focus on getting the shot and not put her emotions or her morals in the way of her job as a war journalist, you get a shot where Lee, Kristen Dunst's character, deletes the photo she took of Sammy because she's no longer following her own advice. She's developing those feelings, that empathy that makes it impossible to do that job well.
just the perfect. Just the idea that you got four of them, right? And you got the two with Lee and with Pablo Escobar's character.
Joel.
Kenley is the older one, and she is the younger one. There's a whole movie to dissect there other than Texas and California. It's how they represent two sides of that same coin. Like you're saying, someone who's starting to become more desensitized. And then the guy at the end who went, we weren't supposed to do this. I should know better. And then goes against his own judgment, like you said, bringing back emotions at the end of his career and finding his demise. There's so much that they're breaking down about this job, about this profession, about war, about what you have to lose more than your life. But California and Texas.
I mean, I think that small moment, I think, really, really elevated the whole
arc. That's the movie, That's the movie.
Yeah, that's really what the movie is. Yeah, it's the essence of the film.
Mm-hmm.
They also have a brief meeting with field reporter Sonoya Mizumo, completing
everyone.
Alex
they said
Garland.
She wasn't in Men, but she was on the phone in Men.
Yeah.
That's the lucky charm right there.
Yeah, so all the recurring characters showing up. And they find out that the Western forces are about to take D.C., that the president is no longer going to be there for their potential interview opportunity. And I think this does sort of contribute to what does feel a little bit like a weird climax for the movie, right? Because they're spending this whole movie in search of a goal that suddenly gets wiped out from them. And that is, you know, it's part of the changing dynamics of a situation like this. It makes sense for the characters, but I think I can understand some people feeling a little bit like the last half hour of the movie is almost like a different film tacked onto it, partially because of that.
I would just Skype the interview.
Right? I mean, too bad the Wi-Fi wasn't good at the hotel. They could have taken care of it right there. Yeah.
The Wi-Fi was bad.
Right. Maybe they would have found that... that deli in West Virginia if only Yelp was working. I don't know.
Damn it. That's really to blame. That's what we should be upset about. Damn it, Comcast. But no, I can see that. You know, it's obviously leading to this moment that's obviously going to happen in D.C. It's America. I thought it was technically a masterpiece. It was insane. The sound design, the approach to it, you know, just removing any other elements but the filmmaking aspect of it. I didn't know he had that juice in him. I mean, I saw moments in Annihilation, but this did not feel like Annihilation. This felt like an actual military raid. Like, you want to talk about propaganda? Hurt Locker. You want to talk about propaganda? What's the next one? She also did Zero Dark Thirty.
Right.
This was up there with those movies, but removed what was clearly funding from, you know, actual military stuff. This got that down pat. And the people who should be liking it the most are not.
I don't know. I mean,
it's a little confusing, but I thought it was intense.
Well, it's almost weird because, like, we both liked it. I'm trying to sort of qualify how much you liked it because I don't know if I would put the ending sequence quite up there with, like, you know, what we saw in Dune in terms of the way that Denny is able to visualize these massive action sequences. It's really impressive, though.
Sure, I can have Dune at number one, but this is still going to be in that top five, dude. This is that, like you're saying, a scene in Dune that you want to test out your speakers, your nice Dolby TV. So is this one.
You know, the sound design in particular.
The technical aspects of it. I'm not going to be playing, you know, the fictional president getting killed on my TV when guests come over, but the idea of how it's mixed... 100%. This is mopping a lot of big blockbuster movies. I was very impressed with the approach that he took.
Yeah.
You
and the production design that we alluded to earlier is all really, really excellent. Just like,
right?
I think
it's Call of Duty here.
Exactly. There's some shots that I think look a little bit like Netflix show wonky-ish, but like good.
Really?
But like the digitalness of it, I think
okay.
Maybe it was on the rewatch that I really noticed them a little bit more. But, you know, it's still like visceral edge-of-your-seat action filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What approach would you wanted them to have taken at the end? Because I figured it's going to have to lead up to the president. If that's what this story is saying is the end goal.
Right.
It's like any other movie where they got to get to the king. They got to get to anywhere else. And I think that was another part of the Grace Randolph was she was surprised that they were going to get there. It's like you have no problem with a Hitler dying. You probably have no problem if it was, I don't know, be it Russia, China, whoever you don't like that you'd give a pass to.
Yeah.
Check yourself because that's what you're doing here.
Well, I think, you know, it's that whole sequence in this incredibly intense raid where, you know, Lee's character, just to talk more about her journey as well, she kind of has this whole panic attack as the as the firefighting starts to break out, and she has to collect herself before they actually go into the White House. But, you know, they've sort of reversed roles, Lee and Jesse, in that Lee is now the one overcome with her emotions, and Jesse is like the one who's dispassionate, cold, and ready. Yeah, exactly.
The more she's emotional become you become, the closer you are to your death in this field. What a movie, bro.
Absolutely.
Before we go on, just because it happens in the movie doesn't mean that we are for people going in and killing a president. That is just the realities of war. I don't understand when we started watching movies and they needed to handhold us.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the messed up reality that happens at the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, if we were going to do a movie about the fall of Gaddafi, should we cut that scene out or something?
Right? And what's fascinating is that it's not that they infiltrate the White House and kill the president. It's who the president is and who it is that kills him. So if you swap it to the appropriate ones for you, then it's okay. Psychopathic behavior. That's psychopathic behavior.
Exactly. Like we because we like identify certain people feel more our side. I don't know. Whole idea that
No, it's dealing in the realm of Come and See, which, again, when you have a filmmaker quoting that and making the entire cast watch it, maybe some of y'all need to see Come and See, because that is the epitome of an anti-war film. And I think it's the approach that's taken here. It's that you're actually being more entertained by it. And don't get me wrong, it is almost – he talks about this too, which is so fascinating in the South by Press thing, that we are so glamorized by it. Even in showcasing it, I'm talking about the mixing in it. It feels so raw. It feels so real. It feels so scary. It's invigorating. That's why people play Call of Duty. We're fascinated and enamored by war. It's why we're all discussing the movie. But in that, that's also an option to make it anti-war. Look at Killers of the Flower Moon and the discussions that we had, right? People were a little too, I don't know, like thrown off that it was focusing too much on the killers and what they did. That's what this movie is showing us. It's how things would play out. And I don't know, there wasn't like a bet on who was supposed to win. It didn't matter what side did it. The civil war happening in the first place is the fail.
Absolutely. Exactly. And I think it's sort of ultimately what Garland is trying to do is paint a picture of what division reaps, right? And try to bring that to a backdrop that we would respond to more
anywhere else
than anywhere else.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think by removing the politics of it, we can at least sort of talk about the realities of it rather than sort of get bogged down in the sort of blaming aspect of it, because like that's a whole other question. You know, we deal with the politics, we'll deal with real world politics every day.
Every day.
I don't know.
Again, this wasn't supposed to be. Like, there's still politics. Obviously, there's two sides to it. You're mad that it wasn't reflective of the world that we had today. But that's why I always think it's good to remove things. It just wasn't as removed as people want it to be. I always mention Mouse as an outstanding way to tell the story of World War II by removing yourself from all the real world things to be able to see it in a fictional setting. We're a little too close to it right now. It'll take a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, especially like a lot of people are like, oh, well, it's an election year. And, you know, like, that is probably like I think that's a provocation on the part of A24. But if we're just being like real about this, when is it not an election year? Either we're immediately after an election year, or it's a midterm year, or it's the year leading up to an election year. You know, if this movie came out last year, we'd be saying, oh, well, we're in a primary year or something like that.
Exactly.
Like,
it was 2022. I was having a bad week this week. Like, there's always going to be an excuse that has nothing to do with the movie. It has to do with the people watching the movie. And those elements always change. But the movie will be the movie 10 years from now. I mean, think about like all the classics that were canceled upon release from 2001 to everything else. Sometimes the immediate reaction isn't going to be the end all of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
I wonder if there's also a little bit of an element of people being surprised that there's not more Nick Offerman, particularly because, you know, he kind of bookends the movie.
It's a good choice,
have a little
though.
Speech from him in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then in a way, you almost expect there to be a long confrontation and him to sit across the table and talk about the reasons he did what he did and why they're right. And no, it's not that at all. It is much more direct
perspective. Yeah.
They took their shot.
They both took shots, huh?
Yeah. So you like how the movie ended?
That's a question where it's like, that's exactly how I wanted it to end.
Right.
I think it serves the purpose of what the movie was saying, and people are taking it like it's a win, and they need a subtitle to be like, this is being cheeky. The whole end credits being them posing.
Right.
Is disgusting. Like, he is calling out the celebratory thing that we do when we killed Osama, when we kill whatever else over there, but not here.
Yeah.
This is where we stop. Like,
exactly. And why is it so precious when it's here?
The idea that it's such a conservative wet dream to do that, but then you flip the roles for it to be the opposite president and a black woman who shoots him, he is trolling you so hard, I'd be embarrassed to admit that I fell for it.
Yeah, I mean, look, he talked at South by Southwest that he thinks his movies are funny. There's certainly something funny to how they end this one.
He's making fun of you for what you thought the movie was going to be and then inverting it on you and going, so it's okay only if it's the other way, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty clever. I think I can like imagine a movie that I love that maybe does deal with these elements and also gets political. It would be a movie that's probably like even harder to sell than this one is, and it'd be incredibly divisive too. And I don't know if anybody wants to make that movie, but that's not the movie that he's making. And I think. To pretend it's this movie that's in my head when it's not that movie, I think is doing a disservice to not only this movie, but just like the reality of life.
Look at you. You're more grown than J. Cole. There you go. That's a mature way to look at it. If it did side with you, that's still propaganda. If it sided with what I believed, that's still propaganda. Propaganda isn't just what you disagree with. It's when you stop looking at it unbiasedly and want an angle to it. That's not what this movie was supposed to be. I'm trying to think of a response for the take of it having to end any other way when it's a war movie where the goal is clearly to either take out the president or to keep him. And I think the idea of him seeing his movies as comedies is specifically so that people can see the other side of things. What does it look like when you remove yourself? And I think he did it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think a very successful version of the movie it wanted to be. And I think a lot of it is on the surface. There's definitely some more to pull apart there. And if you're willing to look at it, not a lot of people seem to be willing to look at it right now, which maybe is a vote in that movie's favor. I still had a good time with it. I think you ended up liking it a bit more than I did. I went 3.5 stars. I think you...
I'm a big Alex Garland fan. When he made Men, people true too. Said, wow. But isn't that the thing again? This man was he made Devs and they said, you're such a good writer for females. He made Men and they said, why do you hate females? Like, you can't do a different perspective in this country without someone going, oh, so everything we knew about you is a lie. No. And now this, they know what his politics are. And now they're pretending he's another person. It's a little dishonest.
It's silly.
He's one of my favorite directors. You know, we've been bringing up Dune and Denny being definitely up there. But I have Alex Garland in that top 10 scenario as well because of the way he's able to approach these movies. I think all of his movies age very well. And if this is one of the last ones, like he's saying, in terms of his directing, I hope he continues to write and secretly direct like he did for Dredd in 28 Days Later.
Do you suspect this might be a contender for your top 10 of the year? Nothing set in stone yet, obviously, but... You're keeping it around, or
there's a lot of 4-star movies I have this year. I'm thinking it'll make my mid year, but it's probably going to be in that lower half. And then once we get that slew of movies that you've been telling me that we're anticipating, it might be bumped off. But it's a recommendation of the year for sure.
For sure, I would definitely recommend it as well. What about when it comes to awards? Obviously, this is the biggest budget that Alex Garland has worked with, and we talked about all the things that we're really impressed with in this movie. He, of his previous films, I believe only Ex Machina was nominated for Oscars, nominated for 2, writing and visual effects, and it won visual effects.
Oh, damn. Nice.
I'm with you. I think it definitely is a contender in sound. There's like a thing they do where it'll be – extremely loud, and then suddenly it comes to like a pin drop silence, and you're only hearing like the shutter of the camera, and it's just so, so effective in those scenes.
Agreed. I see.
Yeah. Not sure how much it will be a contender for outside of that. Just not sure that it's going to it's going to resonate as widely as it needs to.
Kaylee supporting?
I could maybe see even the screenplay if some people like it enough. But
that'd be funny to see people react to that.
Yeah, people would certainly have reactions to that.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, yeah, Civil, you mentioned you love Alex Garland. Are you saying that this is one of his best films yet? Is it mid-Garland? Is it low-Garland?
It's that's probably the problem, in the middle.
Right? When you like, you can say right? It's the worst Garland ever, and it's still a 4-star movie for you.
Exactly. I probably have it in the middle. That's not to say it's mid. It's just to say go watch Devs, go watch Annihilation, and go watch Ex Machina.
Sounds good. Yeah. No, excuse me.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe you put it there. I think I got it somewhere in the middle as well. Yeah. I, you know, Ex Machina is still probably the top contender for me, but. It's definitely not at the bottom. So I had a good time with Civil War. I think, you know, especially if you can remove your political perspectives from it or your expectations from it, then I think you can find a lot to really enjoy about the
movie. Y'all know who Alex Garland is. Some of you critics are acting really, really goofy. You know that's not what he meant in certain things. And that's probably more annoying than some of the average people who have been watching him. But I mean, like, everyday people. Because I don't think that outside of like the Twitter echo chambers and whatnot, the regular audiences are going to be enamored by it. I think they're going to be attracted to this story and resonate with it. And that's why A24 is going all out with its IMAX release and such. There is a difference between the two worlds. I mean, even think about it now. Why are we talking about it so much?
Yeah.
Because it's already a hit.
Yeah. I mean, you said that before, and I agree with you. There's going to be a lot of people who I think don't even think about a lot of the things we're talking about and just sort of enjoy the movie for the things that it's doing well. I think there's also going to be a lot of people who pick up like extremely stupid little things and use that as a reason to not like the movie.
But they'll talk about it instead of ignoring it. That's what I'm saying. The audience is going to – they're not going to cancel it. I never expected a Barack Obama movie from last year to have had the Bunker Boys breaking it down bit by bit like he was sending them a message when they never voted for the man. You're always surprised, actually, by who resonates with a movie. Right. Even if they call something out, they see it as almost like a, I don't know, a sign of something. I think people are going to remember this movie. It's not going to be forgotten is my point.
Definitely. All right, so I think that's about all for this installment, unless you got anything left on Civil War.
I got another hour of quotes that I got here for you. That's it.
All right, cool. So you can catch more from us here on the Intercut Podcast channel. Catch more from me at Zshevich across social media or at Multiplex Show, wherever you find videos. Art, where can people find more from you?
You can find me over at LME Movies, where I'm trying to turn all of my favorite movies into propaganda and not what the director intended it to be. Or you can catch me every week here on the Intercut Podcast.
Yeah, you can listen to every episode. You can listen to every episode of the Intercut Podcast on iTunes or Spotify or whatever podcatcher you use. And make sure you subscribe not just to the audio podcast, but to the video feed as well on youtube.com/intercutpod, where you can watch our conflicted at arms face, I don't know, something like that.
Civil War.
As we run through
this. Remember the Civil War memes from
our uncivil faces as we discuss the latest in entertainment. Find new episodes of our weekend must-watch streaming every week. And please leave us a comment, like the videos. Consider heading over to iTunes to give us the much-requested 5-star review. And you can like our social media pages at Intercut Pod for all of them to get updates throughout the week. From Art, from me, from all the guests that we feature here on Intercut. Click the link to our Discord in the description for this episode. Support us on Patreon, patreon.com/intercutpod. And thanks again for tuning in. And until next time, what kind of American are you?